How's it going? And welcome to episode 238 of On the Wire, proud member of the Pictureless Podcast Network. I am Adam Howe, joined per usual by Kevin Hastings. We've got a great show. We're going to do a bit of a news dump as December decided to do that. I know you don't experience this, Kevin, but I'm in the Midwest. I got a snow dump last week, so this kind of fits the theme of the episode as well. How are you doing out there?
Doing great, Adam. Thank you so much. Yeah, this is great. We kind of talked about it a couple of weeks ago with the winter meetings. We got the news that it seemed like I felt like we hadn't the last couple of years.
Great.
And it hasn't let up. We keep getting more and more. This has been nice.
Yeah, there's a lot of trickle news, but there's a couple. I mean, the fact that we're about to talk about at least three, if not four trades, is always good too. Not every trade has to be a blockbuster, but there's definitely some names in at least two of these that are going to be impacted in our, pretty much every format that we're drafting in. And that's the other thing about drafting around this time of year is when all this news kind of comes in at once, it really starts impacting the way that you decide how you're going to draft or how you're going to, value certain guys in different positions. Another theme we could have gone with is just like, what are you wishing for? Or what are you not wishing for somebody to sign? Like Kyle Tucker still hasn't signed, but wherever he signs, it's going to impact the entire lineup and outfield playing time, whether it be lineup position and kind of ideas. Like it's not going to change Kyle Tucker's valuation, but where he signs will trickle down to others on that team. So we're going to talk about we're going to run the gamut in this one because there's a lot. There's a lot of news here. We're going to start off with the trades. Let's get the big one out of the way. There was a three-team trade that just happened recently. And stop me if you heard this before, but Pittsburgh and Tampa decided to make a trade and everybody feels that it probably went in one direction or the other.
Is Chris Archer finally healthy?
Yeah.
Is that what's happening?
that's the trade right here. This time, Tampa Bay is getting Jacob Melton and Anderson Brito. This is a three-way trade between Pittsburgh, Tampa Bay, and Houston, by the way. Houston got Mike Burrows. Pittsburgh is getting Brandon Lau, Mason Montgomery, and Jake Mangum. They all spent time in the majors. The guys going to Pittsburgh last year. Obviously, Brandon Lau been in the majors for a bit now as well. Start wherever you want to start, Kevin. As far as like the impact on all these players, kind of moving and swapping, jerseys.
Well, I think as we talked briefly off air, very briefly about this, one thing that struck me right away, Roster Resource has Mangum and Lau hitting 1-2 for Pittsburgh. So they added the top of their lineup. We're going to expect some regression due to ballpark, certainly, but we were going to get that from them anyway.
Yes.
With their home stadium
fixed.
Their home stadium. Yep. So in Tampa. So that's changing, or not in Tampa, but for Tampa, however we should say that. I'm not so sure. I just think it's going to be nice playing time for those guys. That's first thing. I think, with the starting staff Pittsburgh is putting together with some other young guys still coming, adding Mason Montgomery makes a lot of sense. And then it's so intriguing what Houston may be able to do with Burrows, right? I've already seen posts where he already said they already told him he's adding a two seamer.
There you go.
Right. We're already, so he's a guy that was already intriguing to a lot of us, and that makes it even more intriguing. So yeah, I think there's quite a bit here. And that could be exciting. I think most of these guys move up in drafts a little bit, just due to the, I know it's going to be a team downgrade, lineup downgrade for Lau and Mangum, but I feel like we're going to be more assured of what their playing time will be a little bit. So maybe it evens out and or maybe even gives them a little bit of bump after this trade. They're in the news, right? It doesn't necessarily have to be a better situation. It's just, we're talking about him. So yeah, I think all these guys move up a bit.
That's literally all it takes. It's like, yeah, if your name is in a headline or mentioned on a podcast or something, all of a sudden, and you're in the middle of a draft. Oh, whoa, I forgot about that. Let me, maybe I should bump that up just because the name is out there. Yeah, I mean, Brandon Lau, pending health, should, you know, pretty much play every day in Pittsburgh. And that's not something you could have necessarily guaranteed in Tampa just due to the nature of their roster construction and lineup construction as well. Yeah, I mean, it's the asterisks on this trade, but the Burrows part is the most interesting to me just due to the fact that you're moving into that. He's moving into that situation. It seems like a safer situation in general. Being able to add a new pitch on a winning ball club, giving just a little bit more intrigue than he already possibly had with the Houston Astros. It's gonna make more of a note in my brain than pretty much every. I think it's gonna move the needle more for that one individual player than any of the other players. I think on the list.
Yeah, I want to let's talk about this for a little bit because I'm intrigued by Houston's current rotation. I'm really intrigued with Aaron Geddie, especially after hearing Eric and Nick on the corner talking about pitchers after pick 300 that they're both really like him. And I was nodding as I was listening. I agreed with everything they were saying. Roster Resource doesn't even have him in the starting rotation now with this move, with both Ryan Weiss and Mike Burrows ahead of him. Of course, it's not if, it's when McCullers hits the IL again,
right?
And then this won't matter. But do you think Aaron Geddie is going to be in this rotation to start the season?
I would anticipate that to be the case. I mean, I don't think, I mean, just because we're looking at a top five on, you know, what Jason has on and Roster Resource, mm-hmm, obviously doesn't make it true. There's going to be a battle for those bottom three. I mean, those last two spots ultimately. Yeah. Lance McCullers, if healthy, he's got the three spot. I don't think there's a question there, but there's a big if, as you just mentioned. But between Burrows, Weiss, and Aaron Geddie, Jason Alexander's not out of the picture either.
Right.
They have competition, right? It's not like they can't go out and sign a Freddie Peralta or like somebody else that's still out there. There aren't that many left. We're going to talk about a couple that have come off the board later on as well. So that might not be like the way that Houston goes. They're not necessarily known to like go out and spend a bunch of money, especially on starting pitchers per se. So that probably won't happen. So this might be what we're looking at as far as what the competition is for spring training. But I mean, I'm not going to put it past Aaron Geddie to win that spot for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But that, I mean, and where Aaron Geddie's not even on the,
yeah, they have him in AAA.
Jason Ellington have him on the major league roster.
Got him in AAA.
Yeah. But that is entirely,
which I think would be the case. I don't think they'll pitch him out. They'll keep him stretched out if he's not in the rotation.
I mean, how important do you think it is to Houston to have a lefty in that rotation? Because they got no options. They got three guys in the bullpen, and none of them are going to be stretched out to be starters. So maybe that's not a concern.
We'll put it this way. How confident are you Burrows starts the season in the rotation? Let's kind of flip it.
Takes that two-seamer, any,
because he's already at pick 350. So if he goes up, you're drafting him you're starting him.
He'll fit really well into a future episode where we do ask, like, right? If we, you know, like, where do you draft him? What kind of format do you draft him at 350? Because you can, at 350, you can draft him anywhere, right? You can draft him in pretty much in a 12-team.
But he's going to go up. So now he's going to be in that redraft final couple rounds conversation. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Not sure. Well, let's get to the other big trade here as well. Also involving Tampa Bay. They were not done. Actually, I think this one happened first. Tampa Bay got a whole slew of prospects from Baltimore. Slater DeBrun, Caden Bodine, Michael Foret, Austin Overn, and a competitive balance round A pick. all for Shane Baz. Good. I mean, everybody and their cousin has been talking about Baltimore is going to go out and get a starter, whether they're going to sign somebody, whether they were going to trade for somebody else. I think the majority might have thought they would have traded from higher level prospects in like, you know, even major league players, but they don't. Instead, they go out and get Shane Baz. Good move. Do you think this is a move that Baltimore is going to kind of be applauded for in the fact that, I mean, obviously Shane Baz has had his health troubles and he's had his troubles in general, but seems to be healthy now. And obviously Baltimore thinks as much. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. And Shane Baz, we saw good things in spurts in 2025. So he was somebody that, yeah, I don't know that we were hearing a ton about him, but he's one of those guys that you kept hearing his name every little bit this off season when talking about people that could take another step forward in 2026. Spurts we saw coming back from injuries and such. So I do like this for Baltimore. And he's going recently just right around pick 200, and he'd already been, he'd been climbing over the past few weeks. Not a ton, but a nice steady creeping up from about pick 225 to pick 200. That's a round and a half to two rounds, depending on 12 or 15 team league, right? So he'd already crept up a little bit. I think this will solidify him into definitely inside that top 200, probably moves up another round or two. Depending on how you feel Trevor Rogers is going to perform after his amazing 2025 going forward, with Bradish coming back, and we did see him healthy and looking good at the end of last year, all of a sudden this Baltimore rotation's looking pretty solid.
Yeah, guys that we all kind of all associate with injuries in some capacity, but Shane Baz, 166 innings last year. Let's not forget that. 31 starts throughout the course of the season. You know, just by looking at that number alone, sounds like a pretty consistent guy, going throughout the whole rest of the season. Somebody that's going to be with Baltimore for the next couple of years, isn't a free agent until 2029 as well. So got a lot of control over a age 26 starter who, you know, at one point you would have thought he would have been their ace, but now slots in at like the three or four with Bradish coming back, of course, and Tyler Rogers making that step forward last year as well. Nice little reclamation project that, you know, if Baltimore can take advantage of the stability that Shane Baz showed last year in comparison to previous years, then, I mean, sky's the limit here.
Yeah, and then Cade Povich still coming as well. Brandon Young, we saw a bit last year.
Yeah, and they still
They have a little bit of depth as well.
Yep. All right, another trade. Your Kansas City Royals make a small little trade here, getting Isaac Collins into their infield. They send Milwaukee Nick Mears. Overall expectation for Collins in the Kansas City lineup?
I think Kansas City's expecting him to be an everyday outfielder.
Okay.
At the moment, I still think they're still looking. They still know that was a weakness. I have loved Michael Massey in the past, and the Royals have as well. I'm not sure if they are really okay going into the season with him at second base, but I think their priority is still outfield in spite of the additions they have made, which already improves it. So that helps. It's improved. But of course, they would like to do a little more. But if, I mean, Collins does anything close to what he did as a rookie, putting up over 2.5 WAR in just 130 games, then Kansas City may have struck gold here. So, yeah, I think as of right now, he is for the most part the everyday left fielder. They do have Jonathan India at designated hitter at the moment. I think they want Carter Jensen to get more at bats than a backup catcher. And India did play some games in left field last year as well, so that could affect it. But as of right now, I would say he's a nearly everyday player in Kansas City.
Yeah, of course, the news that we didn't even mention, I don't know if that matters so much, but Mikel Garcia got locked up for another 5 years as well. So that left side of the infield, perfectly fine. Outfield getting bolstered a little bit by Isaac Collins and, of course, the signing of Lane Thomas recently as well. So a couple of names to add in there. We talked about Jacques Caglione being, you know, your expected right fielder pretty much every day. Salvi's not going to play every day at catcher, but he's still going to play every day. So he's going to take those DH spots that you mentioned. Is India that kind of a, has he turned into that kind of a player where they, I mean, they were pretty much moving him everywhere, right? Rookie of the year at second base in Cincinnati, move over to Kansas City, kind of playing all over the place, second base, outfield, what have you, and now expected to be DH only, or like, what do you expect out of India?
Well, it's, he didn't do in 2025 what the Royals traded for him to do.
Right.
Which has been his calling card throughout his entire career, get on base. So I think they're going to give him another run here. I do think they think he was playing through being a little banged up, nothing serious, but he was just banged up quite a bit and playing through it. As this was their plan going into last season as well, was he was going to be the designated hitter. They started moving Mikel Garcia around a little bit early in the year, and then Michael Massey was injured quite a bit again and underperformed when he was healthy. India ended up playing quite a bit of second base, and that may be what happens right out the gate this season. India could be second base if Massey is still struggling, and then the Royals are looking. Then they have that opening at DH. We get Carter Jensen more days behind the plate, DH days when he's not catching. In fact, as much as I like Michael Massey and I hope he gets things figured out, I kind of think that's probably what ends up happening.
Right. All right. Well, there's your Royals. We got another. Well, I'm calling it a three-way trade. It wasn't a three-way trade. It was really two trades that just kind of happened back to back. Kansas City still involved here, getting Matt Strom from Philadelphia. Then Philadelphia goes and grabs Kyle Backus to kind of replace him in the bullpen, ultimately, from Arizona, trading Avery Ausa-Acevedo over to Arizona as well. What is Matt Strom's role with your Royals?
Late inning reliever, but not the ninth inning. Similar to what we've seen throughout most of his career. It's going to be him and Lucas Erceg as the righty and lefty, depending on the matchups. They'll be the seventh and eighth inning guys, and then they will leave the ninth for Estevez.
Matt Strom has just always seemed like the guy that really wanted to be find a place where he would get stretched out and let him start. And then every time it looks like that's going to happen, it fails miserably. And he goes back into either a long relief role or a late inning guy and is phenomenal, you know, most of the time. And so, yeah, I'm just wondering if Kansas City is going to try it again.
I don't think so. He is by far right now the best strikeout guy in that bullpen. So that was why they went and got him. Mm-hmm.
Philadelphia, go ahead and get Kyle Backus, just depth in the bullpen, just kind of backfilling Matt Strom being traded away as well. What did Kansas, I couldn't find it. What did Kansas City give up for Matt Strom? For Strom,
Jonathan Bolin.
Oh, okay. No, I didn't even see the other half of that. I just saw Strom come through. All right. Well, Philadelphia.
Hopefully a change of atmosphere. He was drafted that year with Brady Singer and Daniel Lynch when all those guys were drafted. Good luck to him. That change of scenery gets him going as well.
Well, Philadelphia wasn't done with those two trades. Previously to those two trades, they had made two signings. They signed Brad Keller to a 2-year deal and Adolis Garcia to a 1-year deal. And Kevin, I want to get all of your thoughts on those. But first, we're going to take a quick break. All right, Kevin, we got two signings by the Philadelphia Phillies. First, Brad Keller signs a 2-year, and we're going to hear this a lot throughout the episode, a 2-year, $22 million deal for a pitcher. Not the last one we'll mention. Start there. He's got a slot into that rotation at some point. Is this a good spot for Brad Keller?
I think it's a great spot, but I don't think he's going into the rotation. He was amazing as a reliever last season. And I think that's why Philadelphia brought him in. Like you said, just slide him where Matt Strom was. Sure. Not quite the strikeout guy as Matt Strom, but they still have, Duran and Alvarado, Orion Kirkering. I think Brad Keller just slides right in there with those guys. And Roster Resource actually has Keller in the seventh with Kirkering earlier in the games. I don't think that will be the case every game, but maybe sometimes. Absolutely. Yeah, I think Keller is one of the, three or four late inning guys in this bullpen now.
Yeah, I can see. Yeah, I misspoke there, obviously not going into rotation, but in as somebody you can see pitching, multiple days in a row and like eating up innings, on multiple occasions for the Phillies. The Phillies bullpen has always been something that's like, the joke is like, this is where closers go to die, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, no matter how good you are, once you go to Philly, become their closer, something happens. Knock on wood, I'm not expecting that out of Duran, right. Of course. But like the rest of the bullpen has been all but solid for the most part. It's like, you just never know who's going to be that guy, right? There was that time where they signed like three guys to extensions, Sir Anthony Dominguez, Alvarado, and none of them ended up kind of like taking that reins. It's nice to see them have somebody like Duran to be the obvious guy that can not kind of almost take the pressure off of the other guys. They're not fighting for that spot anymore. Even Alvarado had his moments. Keller's not there to be a closer, but so we can expect Keller to kind of like, use me how you need to use me. I'm going to do what I can to win. Philly obviously is a contending team. And we will, we'll see them fighting out throughout the course of the year. Your boy Adolis Garcia signed a 1-year deal, $10 million. It was also reported, or it's also expected, that pretty much means Nick Castellanos is not coming back to Philadelphia. And so that means, with Schwarber obviously taking up the DH spot, Garcia is their everyday outfielder. This seems like a pretty good spot, for Garcia in this kind of a lineup, with that kind of protection, especially in the top half of this lineup. I don't know. I couldn't have thought of a better place beyond, the obvious Colorado type of options.
As a Royals fan, I was hoping we're looking for an outfielder. I couldn't agree more. I love this spot. And it's somebody that has always been probably a little higher on Garcia than many others. Yeah, I'm definitely in.
He seems like their type as well. The Phillies type. All right. So let's see. Let's go with a smaller deal. Arizona. I love these kind of deals too, because it's like you trade away a guy at the deadline and then he goes off and does whatever he needs to do, and then you bring him back on a 2-year deal. So Arizona did that with Merrill Kelly, trading him away at the deadline. He signs a 2-year, $40 million deal. Basically, I'm using that $20 million deal as the this is close to the 222. It's double that, but like $20 million was basically what the qualifying offer is, right?
Yep.
So he got basically 2 years of qualifying offer money to come back to Arizona. I'm torn on this, because if you're chasing wins, how much are you believing in Arizona? Everybody was pretty happy, like, to see him get out of Arizona at the deadline to go to a team that you thought you'd have more win opportunities in Texas. Is this like a kind of a sign that's like Arizona is either desperate to fill that rotation, or that they are still trying to, compete in the NL West and there's going to be more wins that I'm fearful of?
Well, it depends. Like, we keep hearing about Ketel Marte being on the trade block, right? That would be a big indicator.
The rumors about like Bregman being of interest
coming in. Yeah, exactly. If they do that, are they moving Jordan Lawler? So because, you know, I think one thing that that we've kind of even overlooked, and we've talked about Geraldo Perdomo when we drafted him a couple of months ago.
Sure.
We've talked about him quite a bit. And but I think what we're kind of forgetting is we kept wondering what Arizona was doing.
Yeah.
They knew what they were doing all along. They had Perdomo right there. Right.
Sure.
So I think we kind of overlooked that a little bit, but yeah, is Lawler on the move if they're considering bringing in Bregman? I tend to think that Arizona does want to compete. If they get blown away with an offer for somebody like Marte, then maybe, and they think they can still make that work and compete now, and it helps prepare them for the future, maybe they do something. But I think they still think that they can compete. They're not spending, you know, a ton of money, but bringing in guys like Soroka as well that could do something. So yeah, I tend to think that Arizona isn't gonna, they're not gonna go out there and get Kyle Tucker, but maybe Bregman, and I think they're trying to compete.
Merrill Kelly, Arizona Diamondbacks opening day starter. Question mark. I mean, look, I mean, yes, I understand. They have some young guys that are coming.
Yeah. Oh, he is of who's on the roster right now.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of who's left. I probably.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Obviously, Eduardo Rodriguez has the contract and, you know, what have you, but he's not the face of that organization. Merrill Kelly very well might be, even though they traded him away. That would be, I find that narrative hilarious as well. It's like, I'm going to trade you away, but you're still going to end up being our opening day starter next year. Yeah, I mean, Jordan Lawler very well. If, you know, you sign somebody like Bregman and you trade away Marte, Lawler doesn't have to be on the move. They can just force him to play second base, right? Or they there can, you know, he's already moved positions once or moved around. He has a couple of reps at second base throughout his, you know, career as well. So a lot of moving parts. None of those rumors made sense to me, especially being on the other side of it as a Red Sox fan. The Red Sox Boston was like front and center in the rumors of Ketel Marte conversations. It still doesn't make any sense. That contract is so nice for him at his age, what he brings to the table. I don't expect anybody to kind of blow Arizona away to make that actually happen.
Remember how excited so many people were this time last year about Pavin Smith getting every day at bats. They have him in there again at the same time of year again.
What happens? What do they do to ruin all of that? All right. Well, that was Arizona. Let's stick with the single signings here because it's another one of your boys. Minnesota signs Josh Bell to a 1-year deal, presumably to play a majority of first base, probably throw in some DH in there as well. You got to expect, I expect him to get more playing time with Minnesota than he did with Washington. What says you?
At least about that, I would say. Yeah, he ended up with 533 plate appearances. He is a switch hitter, much better from the left side these days. If he is going to be platooned, that's the side we want him to be better from. And it's great. After a slow start, he got to the 20 home runs. Little lower in batting average than would typically. I always said 240, 250 is what he's going to give us. He only gave us 237. But yeah, Josh Bell, I think, is going to be at least strong side platoon and probably at least a little more than that in Minnesota. And right now, projected to be hitting in the three spot. Even if Minnesota's bad again, I will take that all day long where Josh Bell's being drafted, especially in a draft and hold.
All right. A lot of signings here in San Diego. I'll run through them. We can go in any order you want. The big one, of course, Michael King returns to their rotation with a potentially three-year deal, $75 million. He does have an opt-out after every single season in that deal. They also make a minor league deal with Tristan McKenzie coming over as an option for depth here. And that's good because there was a report that Yu Darvish is not certain he will ever actually pitch again after having his additional surgery. They also sign Sungmoon Song as well. I didn't see what the length on that contract was or what expected position he might be playing. But overall, Michael King, 3 years, $75 million on the surface seems really good. It is backloaded. So it is, a player friendly deal because they are player out, opt outs. So if he does struggle to stay healthy, he can very easily just be like, yep, I'm good. And if he, you know, does everything he expects himself to do in the first year, sure, he didn't make a ton of money on that first part of that first year of the contract, but more money could be coming than just the $60 million that's left. It's one of those things where it's like Michael King was going to sign. If it was like, we talked about this with Kershaw before, it's like, if he wasn't going to sign with San Diego, if San Diego wasn't going to bring him back, were you going to be less trustworthy of where he went? Are you happier that he ended up going back to San Diego and thus trust a little bit more?
Yeah, at least slightly. Maybe not a lot, but slightly. Yeah, it's just comforting. And maybe it shouldn't be, but yeah, it definitely is for me. I'm anxious to see what Michael King can do this season. Had him in many leagues last season, and then the injuries, of course. But yeah, I would say yes. I am probably happier with him going back to San Diego than I would have been if he'd still been out there for a few more weeks, for sure.
And then the other interest, I mean, Tristan McKenzie is nice to, you know, as depth, and we'll see if he can kind of bounce back and they can do anything with him. But Sungmoon Song, at least Jason's got him here as a strong side of platoon at second base.
Yeah.
Jake Gruenworth over to first base full time. Overall thoughts, what are your expectations for the newest second base import, for San Diego?
Yeah, he's very intriguing. We know he's not going to do exactly what he did in the KBO. We know that. I think you brought it up last week. I think that was last week when we were talking that maybe NPB, AAA, or maybe I'm thinking, maybe that was Van and Steve when I was listening to Wins Above Fantasy the other night. And then KBO, more another level. Right.
Yeah.
Sure. But so even if you said at high A or double A, we had a guy with slugging 530 with a 315 batting average that went 25-25, we'd be interested.
You'd still be. Yeah,
sure. We would be interested. So, yes, I expect probably the power to regress a little more than the speed. But if this is a 10-20 guy that hits 270 at second base, well, that's appealing right now.
Yeah, I think what's interesting here is just the way that they're kind of building this infield. As I mentioned, you know, Roster Resource has him at second base on the strong side of the platoon. He's not platooning, though, with another second baseman, right, per se. At least they're expecting Luis Camposano to take the right-handed at-bats here. I would assume that just gives Camposano more opportunities for playing time than what you would see in a true short side platoon, right? Jake Cronenworth probably moving over to second base to fill that spot at any time, because they're, you know, I think they're probably done moving Xander Bogaerts back over there, or they're not going to do that again. So, yeah, I mean, I've always been interested in Luis Camposano as a catcher, eligible player. So just knowing that, you know, he could have those extra at-bats between the, you know, every third day catcher, every fourth day catcher, and filling in at first base a little bit more than a short side of platoon is a little bit more intriguing. And this is what I was talking about. Like, these signings don't always affect the individual player. They, you know, there's always other impacts here. All right. Well, San Diego was busy. How worried are you to read anything about Yu Darvish? Worried about not, like, is he does that kind of news or speculation just take him off of your, board? Is there a
situation? Yeah. And it's still drafting him. It's kind of where I was at already.
Anyway,
unfortunately, after last season, a couple of times we thought he was about to come back and then they got pushed back and we didn't hear anything. It's unfortunate, but yeah, I hadn't been considering Yu Darvish this season.
He just kind of rides it out and, keeps making his $18 million a year and through 2028 and, he may never pitch again, but I think it'll probably take a buyout to get him off of the roster.
Yep.
Anthony Rendon style. All right, let's go over to Cleveland. Makes a couple of smaller moves in their bullpen. Sean Armstrong, 1 year, $5.5 million deal. They also trade for Justin Brill from Toronto. Obviously, the back end of their bullpen with Kate Smith is pretty much locked and loaded. Do you have any feelings on either one of these additions for the Guardians?
No, I feel like Cleveland, I feel like Cade Smith is their Class A replacement, as he was for much of last season. Gattis is Smith's replacement, and Sean Armstrong is Gattis's replacement.
There you go.
Widen him right in. I think they have a very, very strong back end of that bullpen without Class A.
There you go. All right, so I'm gonna skip the Mets first. I will come back to the Mets because I was the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim continue their reclamation project collection. Like, they're going to like card shows, right? And they're just trying to find cards that have decreased in value, hoping that they can keep them in mint condition and like and resell them at some point or another. This time it's Jordan Romano, who signs a 1 year, $2 million deal. And then Drew Pomeranz with a 1 year, $4 million deal. We'll get to it in a little bit, but of course they also lose their former closer in Kenley Jansen. I mean, Jordan Romano, can he take, there's a situation here in which Romano is fighting with a bunch of other reclamation projects to become a closer and, you know, bring his value back up. Are you drafting him hoping that could be the case?
I don't think so. I think this could change throughout spring, but if I was making this decision now and I was going with a veteran, I'd probably go with Drew Pomeranz as the closer. But I'm hoping finally, Adam, 2 years ago, you drafted a whole lot of Robert Stevenson. And
why wouldn't you?
Absolutely. And I think that's probably where we're at. That's where Roster Resource has. That's what I'm hoping. That's where I think they will probably go. But either one of those two veterans over Jordan Romano, unless, like I said, come out in spring and Romano looks like he did a couple seasons ago.
Yeah. Of course, they also got Ben Joyce, waiting in the wings until when he comes back from his elbow injury or shoulder injury, excuse me. They've got some fun names that could go in any direction, but, in very Angels fashion, I don't expect Romano to be on the Angels come July or August as well. Unless he completely just falls apart and he has no trade value whatsoever, then they'll just eat the extra million. All right, we'll go back. Small deals in Chicago. The Cubs signed Tyler Austin, former top prospect for the Yankees, to a one-year major league deal. That's the only reason I'm mentioning it. This is a major league deal. They also bring back Caleb Thalbar to their bullpen as well. Tyler Austin, nothing more than a bench option, I'm assuming, but it is a major league deal. So he's going to be, you know, at least on that opening day roster.
Yeah. And we'll see what happens. Cause it's been 2019 was the last season that he played in MLB, and it's pretty rare, but once in a while, these guys that they disappear for a few years and they come back and they look completely different. So we'll see what he looks like in spring, but, yeah, that's all. That's the extent of it for me at this point. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, we'll finally go back up to New York as the Mets. They sign another Yankees reliever, and we'll get to that right after this break. All right, I'm not spoiling anything. You guys all know this by now. The Mets signed Luke Weaver this time to get this. Shocking, a 2-year, $22 million contract. Pretty obvious he's just going to continue to just do what he did last year, and that is set up Devin Williams for most of the season, if not the entire season this time. But does Luke Weaver with the Mets become one of those players that we're going to either talk about a lot or not be able to talk about a lot because he still brings that kind of value in the eighth inning? With a low, you know, with low ratios and high strikeout rates, what are your expectations on Weaver fantasy value throughout the course of the season?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think he's a good spec for saves play as well. Not one that you think is going to take over the job, but he's somebody that can be useful in our lineups. And if Devin Williams would be injured, he probably slides right in. I think, you know, the 5 to 10 saves that somebody else will get other than Devin Williams, Luke Weaver gets at least half of those. Mm-hmm. Either him and AJ Minter, but with Minter being the lefty, I think that you would see Weaver getting more than half of those opportunities. So he's not going to be a zero in saves anyway and can be valuable in ratios and strikeouts in our lineups, even without the saves. So yeah, absolutely. Luke Weaver is, I'm much more fond of him than I was this time last year when I did not think he was going to be the Yankees closer. Now that we know he's not going to be a closer and we don't have to pay for that, I'm in.
Yeah, that's the key part. You're not paying for the speculation of being in a different role, right? You're just paying for the value that a very solid eighth inning guy can still bring to your teams, and in a draft and hold that becomes pretty valuable, especially later on in that draft. You know, totally somebody I'd be fine speccing in the 30th round to kind of just iron out my rotate or my pitching options. In a fab league, but not somebody I expect not to drop at some point really, you know, soon when I absolutely need to.
Right. Because you can find someone
exactly
else like them.
We'll talk about them every week.
Yeah.
All right. We got the Texas Rangers making a whole bunch of moves, especially to their bullpen, signing a bunch of, I wouldn't say reclamation projects, but just like guys that, you know, could be competing for some kind of position on 1-year deals, including bringing back Chris Martin, bringing in Alexis Diaz and Tyler Alexander, all to 1-year deals in various roles within their pitching depth. And then on the catcher side, they do sign Danny Jansen to a 2-year deal. Start with Danny Jansen. I mean, how much playing time is he getting with Texas? And again, this seems like it could have been the best place Danny Jansen could have signed.
Yeah, I think, you know, Higashioka is a good backup catcher. So I think he gets a little more than old school backup catcher starts. He's going to get at least one, if not two starts a week. But like we always say about Danny Jansen, if he's healthy and he's going to get at least, I would say, the 60-40 split of the starting catcher duties in Texas when healthy, then to start the season, I'm happy with Danny Jansen. I know we're going to talk more about this next week, but Danny Jansen, for me, more of a fab play. Because in draft and holds, I don't want a fourth catcher. And if Danny Jansen's one of my top three, I probably feel like I need one. So he's more of a fab play where if he gets hurt, I can let him go.
Danny Jansen just seems like it just seems like somebody who has played a lot more than he has. As I go look at his player page, I realize he's never had more than back in 2019 at 384 plate appearances.
Yeah. But since barely then, more than what you were gonna say.
Yeah. 328 in 2024 between the two teams he played for, 337 last year. That was his highest since that 2019 season. It seems like he should have hit 400 at least once in a season, but due to various roles that he's played or different different situations he's been in, especially moving teams. Dan Jansen will always, my memory of Dan Jansen is always going to be that player who played for both teams on a split double. He got traded from Toronto to Boston, but they had that split game where he was the catcher of record when the game ended, and then he was at bat when the game started back up. Or maybe it was the vice versa. Maybe it was the other way around. But either way, that's amazing.
Here's the thing about Danny Jansen, though. And I think this is a good point. He had 337 plate appearances last season, and he hit 14 home runs. He's projected for 352 plate appearances by Fangraphs depth charts and 13 home runs. Basically the same number. But here's the thing. Over a full season, that's only about three games a week that he's projected to play, 89 games. But that's not going to be how Danny Jansen plays those 89 games if he does indeed play 89 games. He's going to play five games a week for 18 weeks. Mm-hmm. Then those 13 home runs in those 18 weeks we had him are extremely valuable.
You get them all.
Danny Jansen is a top catcher when he's playing.
That's the key part. And if you can map that out accordingly, you can get them all and then not have to worry about the times he's not playing for whatever reason that might be. Any of these, the bullpen in Texas last year seemed like it was always in flux, especially at the very back end. Robert Garcia is obviously still there. He had a moment toward the end of the season. Chris Martin, we thought, was going to kind of take that role at one point, never really did. And now Alexis Diaz, who obviously had his own version of success in Cincinnati, didn't really do anything. And, we got his name was in the headlines when he went to LA. Obviously, nothing happened there. What are you going into drafts right now as being the favorite for saves in Texas?
If I had to draft one of these guys for saves right now, and I'm not looking at cost, so I don't know where he's going, but I agree that right now it's probably Robert Garcia, but it's pretty obvious to me that Texas, like last season, is hoping one of these guys they're throwing a dart at steps forward and sticks. Right. I don't think Alexis Diaz stays in this bullpen all season long if he does not show them that he can be used in high leverage. Right. I think Chris Martin, he's almost 40 years old. He's going to do what Chris Martin does. He's going to go out there and throw his innings. But Tyler Alexander, some of these other guys, I think they want one of these guys to take the ninth. But as of right now, they're like I am, and as of right now, it's Robert Garcia.
Yeah, especially since toward the end of the year as well, Sean Armstrong, who we just talked about.
Right. For $5.5 million, I can't believe he's not back in Texas.
Right, right. Especially the way he kind of finished the season in the role that they were kind of throwing him in, that he was earning. All right. Well, getting away from bullpens, we'll go to San Francisco, who they bring in Adrian Hauser on a 2-year, $22 million deal, Kevin. Shocking, I know. but I would, this is going to be, I mean, this, again, seems like the best possible location that Adrian Hauser could have gone to, going into San Francisco, playing half of his home games there. Yeah, he's going to have a game or two in Colorado, just being in that division. But being not a, you know, high strikeout guy who's going to need some help from his ballpark for to bring down those ratios even more so, you're not drafting him as an SP 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5, but like, does this, I mean, at least put him on your radar a little bit more, just being in that rotation.
Absolutely. We're interested in anybody that's going to get healthy innings in San Francisco. And it appears that Hauser will. I'm not so sure. I'm sure San Francisco hopes, and I'm not so sure that Roop doesn't jump over him in this rotation, even before the season begins. However, going into the season, yeah, San Francisco, you know, they have some other guys that they're hoping step forward this season. But I think Hauser, as long as he stays healthy, probably sticks in this rotation for all of, if not most of the season, and can give us that nice, you know, he's not going to give us the strikeouts, but he's going to give us the win potential and nice ratios in this lineup. So yeah, definitely Adrian Hauser for the cost.
He just needs to stay healthy, right? Yeah. Like if he's pitching, if he starts a game, he's going to qualify for the win as long as his team backs him up. Which is nice. It's like, but if he gets hurt and he's hurt for any more than like he misses one or two starts, I'm not worried about dropping him, especially in a fab league. You know, he kind of fits into this conversation we're going to have in the next episode with like, where do you draft somebody like this where you're like, you don't, I mean, you never want to expect someone to be hurt, but Adrian Hauser has never pitched more than he's never started more than 26 games in any given season. And that was his age 28 season. This is his age 33 season. So you can't rely on him per se to be the workhorse and be on your roster all season long, especially since when he is healthy, he's not giving you that kind of, he's not going to volume his way into a whole bunch of strikeouts. To your point,
nobody really does give you volume of the ratios, right? He did average over six in his first start, last season, right? And so that's what's amazing to me, is that he did give us six innings a start. Mm-hmm.
And if he
was only 21 starts, but he averaged six innings a start.
But if of the 21 starts, you know, 14 of them or 12 of them are in San Francisco, that goes, those six innings per those starts probably go a lot further.
And eight wins and 21 starts is a 12 win full season.
There you go. All right, let's go. This was another smaller one, but just kind of interesting because it was like a sign and trade for the most part. Washington trades away Jake Bennett to Boston, who made his debut last year for Washington. Gives the Red Sox a little bit more depth, mostly in their bullpen. They get prospect Luis Perales, who's a lot more exciting, but completely crazy as far as like, you never know where the ball's going to go. And so it's the exact move that Washington and Boston should probably be making. Right. Mm-hmm. But then they signed Foster Griffin for a 1-year major league deal, $5.5 million, to come over and pretty much fill that spot for Jake Bennett. It seems like a lottery ticket, 1-year deal. Let's see what Griffin can do. If he does anything that Bennett did, we could probably get something for him at the deadline as well. Are you looking at Griffin to be an early, are you taking the same gamble on somebody like Foster Griffin in your fantasy leagues?
Maybe. I probably should say yes. At least in, you know, certain situations, I should at least be open to that. I guess I am. The Royals drafted Griffin 12 years ago. and they stuck with him for a long time. And we never saw him at the major league level. That's all. That's the only thing that's stopping me from saying, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I know he's coming back from NPB, but we talked about this last week. I'm always going to keep an eye on these guys. I know he's not going to have a 1.62 ERA in Major League Baseball, but a 1.62 ERA anywhere gets my attention.
Hey, for the record, as I'm looking on his player page, you did see him at the major league level. He made his debut in 2020. He had 1 2/3 innings. And then in 2022, before he went over to Japan, he did pitch 4 1/3 before trading him over to Toronto or going to Toronto for 2 innings. I'm just saying it happened. Okay. This is not going to be an eraser here.
Absolutely rooting for him. And yes, I am definitely going to keep an eye on this.
Sure. In Japan, wasn't a strikeout king by any stretch of the imagination either, but did okay, right? 115 strikeouts in 121 innings in 2023, 126 in 116, 2024, and last year, 77, only pitched 78 innings last year. So we're looking at about, a K an inning in Japan. Don't expect that to translate one-to-one, of course, coming back over, but it is nice to see that that volume was there when given the opportunity in a fairly competitive league as well. So
yeah.
This was NPB. It wasn't KBO. So the translation, I think, is a little bit tighter, not as or the exchange rate is not is a little bit tighter than if they were coming over from KBO.
Yep.
All right. We've got a couple more deals to rack through. And this is, like I said, a December news dump here. And we'll get to those right after this. All right. This was a fun one because we talked about San Diego signing a new second baseman from overseas in Sung Mung Song. Obviously, they had another one in a shortstop, Ha Seung Kim. He kind of bounced around a little bit last year, finding some time in Atlanta. Atlanta decides, hey, you're worth bringing back because, hey, lo and behold, we don't have a shortstop. And so Han Sung Kim signs a 1-year deal, $20 million to stay in Atlanta. And supposedly he had a longer deal on the table as well. Was it? I was listening.
448, I heard.
Yeah. West Sacramento, I believe. Yep. So he decided to go with the 1-year deal, obviously more money with an opportunity to bring his stock up. And if he, he totally could be the type of player that just ends up signing 1-year deals for the rest of his career. And that's perfectly fine, especially if it's $20 million a year. Obviously he needs to stay healthy and he needs to put up at least league average defense, speed, all the stuff that he's kind of been known for. But we talked about this. Dubon was going to be the shortstop in Atlanta after the trade that they made earlier on in the season. Obviously, Kim slots in, especially at $20 million as a starting shortstop. Do you expect him to kind of put up what we were kind of hoping he would do as he came back from injury in Tampa Bay?
Yes. I don't think we ever see 38 stolen bases again. I think we do see the 22 stolen bases again. I don't know that we ever see 20 home runs out of him, but I think we'll get close again and get up there to the high teens like he did back in 2023, and especially more time away from the injury. The big hope is that the batting average bounces back. It's over 600 plate appearances, over 650 plate appearances over the past two seasons, hitting right around 233. So we do need to see that batting average bounce back a little bit. And that wasn't a huge drop from 250, 260 where he was, but that's a huge inflection point there for us in our leagues. That range there can make a huge difference to our teams, which side of that, 240, 245 you're on. So that's my concern. Hopefully the batting average bounces back, but no, I think we're upper teens home run, 20 stolen bases. And if we get that batting average back to 250, and I think I expect that with health. So, yeah, and I love the Atlanta lineup. I don't think is ever going to be even as even close to what we saw three seasons ago, like we've been hoping for the past two seasons. But I do think we see some improvement out of the lineup as a whole with health as well. So, yeah, I love the spot.
Man, I hate looking at this lineup and seeing Michael Harris still in the eight spot. Like, what else you got to do, dude? But that middle infield for Atlanta is not the epitome of health either. So, right. Like, don't shy away from Vidal, like taking a spec on Vidal Brujan and Mauricio Dubon, because they're going to find ways to get them in the lineup. If nothing else, to keep Ozzie Albies and Hyung Sung Kim, maybe give them a breather here or there so they do stay healthier longer throughout the course of the season, and or if any one of them kind of goes back on that, they've got some pretty obvious fill-ins in that middle infield on their bench.
Yeah, Dubon still has second, third, short outfield eligibility, and he'll probably play all of those for Atlanta. A full-time player, given all of these guys' breaks. Getting him around pick 500 in a draft and hold is a gift.
Yeah. All right, we got, let's see, Atlanta. St. Louis made a signing, which is rare. I think this is funny just because they made the only other really move that I noticed that they made was the trade with my Red Sox, sending Sonny Gray over for some prospects and what have you. And now they sign who Sonny Gray was basically replacing in Dustin May. So Boston making their moves where they're signing somebody for 2 months and that's about it. With nothing really coming from it, fine, whatever. Can Dustin May make a name for himself in this opportunity in St. Louis where you're actually going to take notice from a fantasy perspective?
I think this is ideal spot for Dustin May. Great ballpark with an exception. You know, I always bring up it does get hot and humid when it in the middle of the summer in St. Louis. It's not quite as good later in the season as it is overall, but great ballpark. And on this team, if healthy, he is pitching 32, 33 starts this season. He's going to go out there every 5 days. If you have ever been a supporter of Dustin May, if you are someone that thinks he just needs a little bit of health and a regular role, then you should be all over Dustin May in this situation. It is absolutely, it'd be hard to come up with a better opportunity where he's going to get to go out there and throw as many innings as he is capable and does well.
Still 130 innings, 130 plus innings last year between the two teams he pitched for. So very easily, I mean, the workload is there. He's built up for it. And you're right. Like, St. Louis is just going to let him roll as long as
he's going later than Dubon. Over the last 4 weeks in draft and holds, 536.
All right. We mentioned it earlier, but the Detroit Tigers sign probably their new closer, at least for the 2026 season, and Kenley Jansen. We talked about obviously them bringing back Kyle Finnegan as well. Solidifies Jansen's not going to sign somewhere that wasn't going to allow him to close. He's chasing his own, you know, numbers and marks, whatnot, especially just signing a 1 year deal. It's pretty obvious that he'll be closing for the Tigers throughout the season, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Maybe not postseason. That we see. That's how baseball works.
Those stats don't count.
But that doesn't matter to us.
It doesn't matter to him either.
Right.
Exactly. He's just trying to get to what 500.
24 of them. I think he needs 24. Right.
Yeah.
Does that sound right?
Yeah. So he very well could. He could get there by the trade deadline, and if the Tigers aren't performing the way that they expect to, Tarek Skubal is still on the team, and they just aren't there. Jansen. Easily a trade candidate as well. If the Tigers just don't, they just do one of those things like where Baltimore did last year, where it's just like they just don't get where you thought they were going to be. Jansen's an easy trade candidate.
Yeah.
Who we thought he would be with the Angels last year, I guess, but he wasn't.
And I know this is horrible analysis, looking at ERA to make a decision, but Jansen had a lower ERA than either Vest or Finnegan.
There you go.
and more saves, less innings. More saves, lower ERA, few less innings. Just looking at surface results, why wouldn't Kenley Jansen be the closer?
We'll end here in New York with a couple of smaller deals. The smaller of the two, New York Yankees bring back Ahmed Rosario. This is their biggest move of the offseason, I think. if you don't count losing players as a moves. 1 year, $2.5 million deal, nothing more than a bench piece depth for their infield, I'm assuming. Is this just like Anthony Volpe insurance policy? They just liked Rosario. Do you expect anything more than what the $2.5 million price tag would allude to?
No, I think this is a utility bat versus lefties. Yeah. And we may talk about him throughout the season when there's a heavy lefty lineup coming up for their opponents. That when they have a lot of lefty opponents coming up, I guess is the way to phrase that. But yeah, that's really what I see here. And yeah, you might get a little more playing time until Volpe comes back, but I'm excited about Caballero until Volpe comes back.
Yeah, when I saw this sign, I was like, oh, come on. Just like, if there's any chance he takes any playing time from Caballero, I'm going to be pissed.
I don't think it will, but maybe a day every couple of weeks for the first month, because we're expecting Volpe early May, right? I understand that. I think I was reading this earlier too. I want to get your opinion on this, Adam. Typically, I am trying to stay away from players like Volpe. I say it every year. I don't always follow through. I feel like I get a little better each year at following through. But then when he is participating in some activities and it's just they're not going to let him dive on the shoulder until April, but he's going to be hitting and doing other things, does that give you a little more confidence that he'll be back early May, like they tell us?
I mean, of course, as long as he's doing something, obviously you're going to have more confidence than he's doing nothing. But it's still shoulder, man. It's still shoulder, and it's right. His throwing shoulder. It's like, it's not something that's not ever going to come back up again. There's only so much babying that they're going to be able to do with him for the rest of his career, in my opinion. But I'm not a doctor. I mean, I don't know for sure. I'd be staying away from Volpe in general. Just not only for missing the first, month in month plus, but I don't think there's any guarantee that he comes back in May and he is the starting shortstop when he comes back, at least not at 100%. And then if he doesn't, and then he re-aggravates it or gets hurt again, they're not going to let him play through it the way they did last year, right? That was the report, like he was just playing through it, and that's why his production was so low, et cetera, et cetera. And they finally pulled him. I don't think they let him do that next year. If that isn't even in the case. I mean, actually, I'm gonna walk that back. I'm less confident the fact that they're letting him do stuff. I'm like, just let him heal. Don't force the issue. But I mean, they're professionals. I'm not. So in New York, the last thing here, the Mets, they found their Pete Alonso replacement at first base. In the form of Jorge Polanco, signing him to a 2-year, $40 million deal. Again, qualified offer money here at $20 million a year. I'm expecting him to play pretty much every day at first base for the New York Mets. Again, less concerned about, because of the money, I don't expect this to be any kind of platoon or kind of sharing time for Polanco. But what does this do for the other corner options that the Mets have?
I agree with roster resource. I think we see them all, and I think Polanco is going to be DH many days. And then with Van Tose at first base and Beatty at third base. So I think we see all of them most days. And I think I like this for Polanco a little more than some others that I've heard. And I don't think anybody really hates it, but some people were not really excited about it. I understand that huge drop in strikeout rate is a big red flag, because people don't maintain that good of an improvement typically, right? So I understand that, but I am, you know, even if he bounces back into the low 20s, like in 2022, you know, back to a 21.3% strikeout rate after he had dropped a 15.6 in 2025, you know, then he hit 235 that year. And so what I'm saying is I don't expect Jorge Polanco to hit 265 for our fantasy teams sure. in 2026. But I know that his career average is close to that, but in recent years, that's not what we have seen. And it's been due to the strikeout rate. Earlier in his career, his strikeout rates were this low. So does that give us just a slight bit of hope that maybe he can keep it below 20%? I don't think so. I think we're going back to low 20 strikeout rate. So the average, but I think he can hit 20 plus home runs again, steal a handful of bases. And in this lineup, I think he's going to be perfectly fine.
Do you think, and you kind of led this off by expecting exactly what Roster Resource has in here with Polanco playing most of his time at DH, Fiento at first and Beatty at third. Mm-hmm. Do the Mets trust Beatty with an everyday role and not have him be just the strong side of the platoon where, you know, if they believe Vientos is going to come back to what he did previous seasons, moving Vientos over to third base on the short side part and Polanco playing first base, somebody else filling in at DH. If I had to guess, as much as I like Brett Beatty, I would see him being the short man. Or pulling the short stick on those days where they're facing lefties, as opposed to Vientos getting a short side of the platoon. I don't know if you have any other feelings on that, but Beatty's the one I'm worried about the most.
Yeah. I would agree. I think he probably has a little bit of a leash early in the season. I think what we finally started to see out of him, the Mets are really hoping that's not it. That, you know, a couple of years ago we were more excited about Brett Beatty. I think they're still hoping that may come, but he is 26 years old, so it needs to be quickly. So I think he has a bit of a leash early in the year, but I agree with you, he's probably the one I would be most concerned about of the three corner
infield. I mean, they've got other infield options. They can move some guys around. Obviously Simeon's not moving off of shortstop obviously Lindor is not going off. Sorry, second base for Simeon and Lindor at shortstop, but their bench pieces, they have multiple infield bench pieces that Acuna has played some third base. Mauricio can move around a little bit. So they have some options on the infield, at least to spell these other guys if a platoon is in the cards or if they're kind of proving it has to be. I said that was going to be it. There's one last thing to kind of mention just because it's sad to talk about. End on a sad note. John Means posted on his social media that he had torn or ruptured his Achilles while working out. And he alluded to the fact that he was supposed to sign with somebody imminently. Obviously, that's not going to happen. So we, you know, wish John Means the best in his recovery. Hopefully he can, you know, pitch again. Ultimately.
Yeah, absolutely. Somebody.
But if you were drafting him, assuming he was going to sign somewhere, you can stop doing that.
Not many were. He's been drafted 15 times.
In 100 and some odd. Oh, more than that.
660 ADP.
All right. Yeah. All right. Well, that is going to do it, I think, Kevin. Anything you want to close it out here that sums up all the news or anything else that you've been thinking about worth closing out with?
I don't think so. I just quickly reinforce the point. I don't even remember who we were talking about. Oh, Danny Jansen. Mm-hmm. There's a difference between consistently low playing time and low playing time projections due to injury. Yes, we're trying to avoid injury, but if it's somebody whose numbers you like on a per plate appearance basis, the projections are probably better than you realize, I guess is what I'm trying to say with some of those guys.
Yeah, interesting to see like just how much playing time actually impacts what your final line ends up being on a week or month or year by year basis. All right, with all that and everything else, that is going to do it for episode 238 of On the Wire. I am Adam Howe. On behalf of Kevin Hastings, thanks for listening. And we bid you goodbye.